Let's spend the next few minutes looking at an idea that we can connect to what we spoke about last time in Rosh Hashanah. Last time we met, I think, where we discussed astrology, but I think the time before that we discussed the cry of the shofar. Who was not here for that? Who's not been here before? So you know it all already anyway. We discussed the idea of the shofar as the sound of the nefesh, of the human soul, really. That's the giving expression of the human soul, the sound that's equivalent to the sound of the neshama, or the raw voice of inner being. That's the sound of the shofar. We discussed that on that occasion. On Sunday night we tried to look at some of its applications. Last night, for those who are here, we tried to look at it in more detail. Let's focus on an idea in Rosh Hashanah now, last time we meet before the next year. So let's try and see something that's not that easy to grasp, a deep idea, and see if we can connect it with what we've been talking about up to now. I'm sure you're familiar with the fact that the unique aspect of the davening, Alba spoke about it, and tonight, for those who are able to, he's giving a shiur on this structure and its halakhic implications, what you have to exactly know about the structure, including shofar, including the davening. People are urged to hear that so that these philosophical ideas can be applied in practice. You have to have a framework on which to build it. But I'm sure you're already aware of the idea that the davening of Rosh Hashanah, the center, the uniqueness of Rosh Hashanah, apart from the shofar, is built around the three elements of the tefillah of the davening in Musaf. Do you know that? There are three unique elements in Musaf that we don't have any other time. We have normally the Shmona Esrei, the Amidah, that the central part of the davening, is usually made up of three brachas in the beginning, as I'm sure you're aware, three at the end, those are always the same. And in the middle, it varies. On a Yom Tov, we have just one in the middle, the Kadosh Shabbos, if it's Shabbos, whatever it is. On regular weekdays, we have 13 in the middle, which are persons asking for his needs. Musaf, normally we have one in the middle, but in Rosh Hashanah, we have an unusual situation that there are three brachas in the middle that form a unit, and they're known as Malchus, Zichronus, and Shofar. Is everyone familiar with that idea? No, not familiar. Okay. I'm not going to go into detail. You're encouraged to hear the other tapes that have gone through it in detail. We have a very short time together. And tonight, Rabbi Auerbach is due to go into it in detail and explain it all and how it's all structured. Very beautiful structure. Each has 10 elements. And each of them have the same kind of 10 element sources, the same kind of 10 sources that describe a full circle. Three from Torah, three from later, and then the 10th one coming back to the beginning. Very beautiful structure. And it's in that very delicate structure, or intense, the organized structure, that the shofar is included and is blown. These three ideas, Malchus, Zichronus, and Shofar, that take a little understanding, a lot of understanding. Let's just focus this morning on one dimension of understanding that possibly can tie together some of the things we've been thinking about and that can put into practice some of the work that we're supposed to be doing on Rosh Hashanah. Malchus means Hashem's kingship, the fact that he rules. I'm not going to go over what I'm sure you've heard already. Just let's state where we're holding. Malchus means that avoider, that work that we do to try and establish in our minds that Hashem is king of the world, the sovereign of our neshomas and our being, what's going to be the next year, everything depends on him. Zichronus is the fact that we have to remember certain things. Very hard to see the connection between these. Remember the Akedah, the fact that Yitzhak was bound as an offering on the altar. Alright, we understand a little bit that remembering that is important because it teaches you to be a sacrifice, to dispense with your own ego, and give yourself up to Hashem's Ratzon. But why is the essential thing here is remembering? Why is it that you have to remember specifically? The work is the work of remembering. Not easy to understand. And the third element is the work of what's called shofar, listening to the shofar, understanding what that sound is, which we won't have time to go into in detail, but also difficult to understand. Why is that intrinsically part of these three things? So there's a mitzvah to hear the shofar, so we've spoken a little bit about it, but what's it got to do with being part of these three things? We know that when three things are always found together, they always have to be connected. In fact, they always have to be connected in the same way. But that if three things are linked together this way, it's not just that there's a mitzvah of hearing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. That mitzvah, that idea, the way we put it into the davening is connected with the other two, and it means that there's a certain work you have to do. Among all the other elements of the work is bonding these three things together. Now, what does that mean, and how does that work? And on the contrary, you would think that Rosh Hashanah is the time to focus on one thing, because it's the source of firstness, as they say in the world. It's the beginning of beginnings in the world. It's the day when the world was created, or more accurately, the day when Adam Adam Rishon was created. Well, the sixth day of creation turned out to be Rosh Hashanah, when he came into consciousness, when he felt life flow through his limbs, and he woke up lying on the ground with the dust of the earth forming all the parts of his body, and he became a man. That was Rosh Hashanah, and what he heard was the shofar. The mystics say, as we try to explain, it's the sound of the neshama rushing into him, and he became aware of himself as a human being. But whatever it was, so you try and get back maybe to a concept of oneness. Why do we split it into three things? Try and understand. There's a very wonderful idea that we can use to open up this subject. The Gaon of Vilna says the following mystical idea, Kabbalistic idea. The whole world has three elements, for instance. The whole creation, there are only three elements that you can find in creation. If you say these three, you've said everything. What he calls Olam, Shana, and Nefesh. Olam, the world, Shana, the year, and Nefesh, the soul. Try and understand this. That is the unity of the creation. How these things, how these three things are all expressions of the same thing. There is nothing else in the world besides these three things. That's what has to be understood. Try and hear this well. What are the three things that there are in the world? First of all, what's called Olam. Olam. That means place. That's the world of place. There's a fortune to be discussed about each of these things, but let's just see if we can pull together just the threads of one theme. There's a theme that's an element of creation that is called world. It's called the world. Place. What we call place. Many, many ideas that go around this. We've discussed before Hashem's name. Hashem's name, the Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, is the gematria. If you work it out, if you understand how the elements are multiplied by each other. In other words, if you want to see that name apply itself in the world, it works out to be the word makom, which means place. Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, each letter multiplied by itself, which always mystically means the way a word expresses itself in the world. That adds up to the same number as the word makom, which means the place of the world. And Hashem is even described, one of the names we call Hashem is place. We call him the place of the world. Doesn't mean a person shouldn't misunderstand. It isn't only the physical place, it's the possibility of existence of the world. But certainly in physical terms, it's the place of the world. That's the first thing that has to be. The mystic says before you have an object, you have to have the place that it occupies. If the if an object isn't there, but the place could still be there. But if the place isn't there, the object certainly couldn't be there. If there's no space that the thing occupies, it certainly can't be there. First you need, which means that the container of all of reality, if you want to put it that way, to understand it that way, the kli, the container of all of reality is the space that reality occupies. If the world didn't, if there wasn't a creation of the dimension of space in the world, there couldn't be a world. That's the first, that's one of these elements. Actually, if you think about it, you'll see a woman's insight here to understand carefully, because these are always the female elements of the world. The place is that which holds everything, really. It's the vessel in which everything happens, which is what a woman is. It's where life is given a beginning. And that's why in Hebrew, all the elements that make up the elements of the kli, the vessel that holds and gives life, they're always feminine in Hebrew. The word for the world, for Eretz, for Adama, the land, is always female. Even if it's not a female word, like Eretz. Adama is a Hebrew, is a grammatically Hebrew, a grammatically female word. But Eretz isn't. And yet it's always Eretz used, Aretz and Eretz in Hebrew, always used in the feminine. Kli, the vessels. Even the stones that are the building blocks of reality, as we've discussed, I think, a number of times here. The word Evan in Hebrew. Evan isn't female at all. The word Evan, there's nothing female about that word. On the contrary, the mystics even say that the word Evan, is, when the Torah talks about Avonim, stones, it doesn't mean, again, when you're 6 years old, it means stones. But when you're a little older, it means the blocks, the units of which reality is constructed. When it says Yaakov laid his head on 12 stones, it all became one stone. Really, we're not interested if he put his head on a stone. It doesn't make any difference to us. Put it on the ground, he put it on a cushion, he put it on another. But that's not the point. The point is that they were the stones that were the building blocks of reality. Those stones fused together to become the Mizbeach. They become the altar. That's what it means. And the word Evan in Hebrew is an amazing contraction of the word Av and Ben, father and son. Av and Ben, when you blend them into each other, spell the word Evan, because the building block of reality is where the father's energy is transferred to the son. That electricity, when the one generation becomes the next, that's the unit that builds reality. But despite that, the word Evan is female. It takes a lot of self control for a man to be able to handle these things. But that's the way it is. So the world, and let's understand, you'll understand more in a minute. You normally have to talk faster than Tuesday, but today. Who's going off for Litskins and things? Maybe concentrate, maybe the kids will float home. So, first element of the world, we'll just have to say the simple points. The first element of the world is the place. The next element, that's called Olam. Olam. The next element is called Shona, which means the year. What we call in English the dimension of time. The dimension of time. If you think about it, what else is there? There's the world, there's space and time. What else is there? Doesn't that account for almost for everything? We'll see, there's another one. But a scientific mind, a Western scientific mind, would be happy to accept that if you've got the world and time, world enough and time, if you've got the dimension of space and the dimension of time, really what else is there? There's all the physical objects in the dimension of space and all the laws of physics and what happens, and there is the time in which it exists. Actually, the mystics say that time is even more feminine because it's a holder. It's a vessel that holds and supports everything. Actually, the physical reality is in place. It's place where it exists in time. Is that right? Which one holds the other one? Does the physical universe hold time? It's not like that. Time is the holder of everything. If time wouldn't be, there certainly wouldn't be anything. If there couldn't be any time for anything to be, certainly, you follow me, much more than if place wouldn't be. Let's not get too philosophical. But you have a dimension of time. That's called Shana, the year, let's say. It means the movement of what... It bonds, it marries into the dimension of space, because it's how space dimension, objects, the world actually is able to play itself out, that is moving through time. Those are the two dimensions. The third one is called Nefesh, the human soul. The human, what a person is, that doesn't fit into either one. Is that right? The human soul is not a function of time, not a function of space. It's a transcendent dimension that is a connection of these two to the higher world. Of course, if you're a modern scientist, so then you think a human, there's no such thing as a human soul. Modified gorilla, which actually is living in time and obeys the laws of nature. That's what they've done to the world. They've just chopped off the connection with the higher world. But of course, anybody knows anything knows that there is something inside you that is a certain, that energy that you can't put your finger on, that knowledge you have of what it means to be who you are and the meaning of relationships and what it's worth being in the world and so forth, those things can't be given any words, but you know that they exist. That's called nefesh. Your own awareness of yourself as a person. What the neshama is, what the human being is. Is that correct? Those are the three things in the world. Those are the three things in the world. There's the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says this. You'll see that once you understand this thing, you'll see everything fits into it. Everything. Every chazal, everything that there is, you'll see. Listen to this. It says, Chamisha Kinyonim, Kona Kodesh Baruch Hu B'Olamo. There are five things that Hashem acquired in the world. We won't have time to go into why five. I want to pick out three of them. You'll see that the other two here fit very much into the structure. Another contradiction. But it says that Hashem has acquired five things in the world. We have to understand here that acquisition, when Hashem is kone akol, which means he acquires everything, it means the deepest kind of acquisition, which means he is bonded to that thing, it is him. It belongs to him in an inalienable way. Can never be stolen away. It's a real acquisition. Actually, if you understand what a kinyan is, which means when you own something, when you acquire something, actually it can never be taken away. The object can be taken away, but your bond, the fact that it's your kinyan, that's why marriage, of course, is called a kinyan. When a man takes a woman, it's always in the... So of course, if you're a thoughtless feminist, you think that it means, you know, a woman's an object to be bought. But it doesn't mean that. It means the bond that happens between husband and wife is an indissoluble bond. It's one... I mean, unless you... It's meant to be that way. That it's a bonding in, that's an acquisition that can never be taken away. That's the way Hashem acquires the elements of his world. What are the five things that he acquires in his world? Like the Zaylohan Torah is Kinyan Echot. The Torah is one Kinyan. Shamayim Va'aretz, heaven and earth, is Kinyan Echot. Abraham, Kinyan Echot. Yisrael, the Jewish people, Kinyan Echot. Beis HaMikdash, Kinyan Echot. The temple, Beis HaMikdash, in Yerushalayim, that's one of the five. And then the Mishnah proceeds to prove each of them, why is each of them, how do we know that each of them belongs to Hashem, that these are the five things. Let's leave out for the moment Torah and Abraham. Abraham, you'll see that they fit very much, we don't have time to explain it, you'll see they fit very much into the format of the three elements. They do not introduce new dimensions. There are new levels in the dimensions, but those two do not introduce new dimensions. If you think about it, all I can say is this, since we don't have time, if you go back to the discussion that we had here Monday a week ago, when we discussed the shofar, we went into the letter Hey, do you remember? And we went into how that connects with Torah and Abraham. And you'll see from that discussion how those two fit into this discussion. I can't go over that now. But the three things that we didn't study before are these. Listen carefully. These are the three things that Hashem owns in the world. Shamayim Ba'aretz, heaven and earth. So the commentary says this means time. Heaven and earth. It's not the world. It doesn't mean, Aretz here doesn't mean the land. It means Shamayim Ba'aretz, the system, the structure, the organization, the Ma'areches, as it's called, of how heaven and earth interrelate. You have to understand that even the word Aretz in Hebrew means running. It says, Al-Shem HaRitza. Eretz has got the word running. Where is it running towards? Shamayim. Which is, the Hebrew word Shamayim is Shamim. It means there. Any place you can say that there's no place else to go. In other words, you've reached there. That's called Shamayim. That's why it's regarded as the Tachlis. It means the next world is called Shamayim. It doesn't mean the sky. It means the place where you can't say any there from there. There's no other place to go. When you're there, you follow me. When you're there, you're everywhere. There's no place to move when you're there. That's why it says that. In other words, what we're saying is that the world and the next world, this world and the next world, are the process of movement from one thing to another. It's the process of development or growing into what you should finally be. The process of growing or movement is called this world, it's called Aretz, running or movement, and the process of what you should become, the end point, is called Shamayim. That's why it says when the Torah was given, that nothing moved. When Hashem appeared and gave the Torah, it says nothing in the world moved, not a molecule vibrated. Why? Because everything was there already. Where was there to move to? Any movement would have been away from. Are you with me? So when it says Shamayim V'aretz, what it means is the dimension of time. The system of things moving towards the Tachlis. That's Shamayim V'aretz. We haven't got time to work it out and prove it in detail. That's what it is. Kinyan Echad. Yisrael, Kinyan Echad. What is the Jewish people? Actually, Avram fits into this also. Nefesh, the human soul. The human soul, Atem Kriyim Adam. You, Jewish people, you called Adam. When Adam was created, it was to bring this thing to the world. That's called the Jewish people. We'll bring down Torah. We'll start with Avram Avinu and bring Torah to the world. That's called the world of Nefesh. And thirdly, Beis HaMikdash, Kinyan Echad, the temple, that place. The Beis HaMikdash is called the place of the world. As we said before, it's the place where the Mizbeach is, which is the center of existence of the world. The creation of the world crystallized, condensed out from that place. That's the center of the world. So you have here the three elements that make up the world. And that's why it says incredible things. I'll tell you just two things that it says about this. 5 minutes, you still here? Two things that it says about these three things that are amazing. The first thing is it says, you'll find in Chazal, if you look at the opposite of these things, anybody who breaks down one of these three, it says he has no share in the world to come. Anybody who breaks down these things has no share in the world to come. What does it say? Listen carefully. It says, Shamayim V'aretz, the system of time. So what does it say? Somebody who breaks down the system of time, the Kedusha of the system of time, the place where time flows out from, has no share in the world to come. What does it say? Hamavazeh Samoyados. Somebody who desecrates the Yom Tov. Yom Tov is always a time. Moed is a time. Again, time flows out into the world. Where's the root of flowing out? That's the source of holiness where time is given birth. The ultimate one is Shabbos. Shabbos is the place where all time is created. The week is created from Shabbos. But Shabbos is called a Moed. Moed means it means a Yom Tov, but the technical meaning of the word Moed means a time of meeting. It means a time of meeting. Moed means where two people, Va'ad in Hebrew, is a meeting or a committee. Moed means where two people agree to meet. Like it says, Bilti Noyadu. Hayel Chushnaim Yachtav Bilti Noyadu. Can two ever walk together who weren't appointed to walk together? Who didn't appoint a meeting to bond? Moed means a time when we walk with Hashem, but it's a time when time is created. So Mavazah Samoed, that somebody who despises, who belittles, desecrates, Yom Tov, is a person who desecrates the root of time in the world. Of course he has no share in the world to come. He's just negated one whole dimension of reality. You see, without this understanding, it's very hard to understand why a person who does that sin has no share in the world to come. In fact, in the Gemara in Chazal, it says that Mavazah Samoed, this means somebody who doesn't keep Chol HaMoed properly. Never mind somebody who breaks Shabbos. Just somebody who doesn't conduct himself properly on Chol HaMoed. Those are the intermediate days of the festivals that don't have Kedusha. I mean, like Yom Tov does, like Shabbos does. If he desecrates that, he has no share in the world. A very serious business. Why is it so serious? Because it's breaking down the heart of one of the three dimensions of reality. Are you with me? What about Beit HaMikdash? So it says, HaMechalel Et HaKodoshim. Somebody who desecrates the sacrifices. That's the same punishment. Because Beis HaMikdash is the place where place is generated in the world. Place flows out from there. That's where the stones bonded together. The sacrifice of Yitzhak was over there, where the world... That's where the world is created from. Adam Arishon, it says, Mimakom Kaparoso in Noilat. Nivro. He was created from the place of his atonement. Atonement means that the altar. That's where he found himself created. That means that he was created at the place where the world is created. Obviously. So that the dimension of place flows out into the world over there. Somebody who... And what's that place for? Sacrifice. Sacrifice. The sacrifice of Yitzhak took place there, and we conduct ourselves in the same way by offering sacrifices in that place. Exactly the same thing. So somebody who goes against the function of that place is going against that dimension of the world. And thirdly, the level called Nefesh, the level called the human being. So what is it against the human that says a person has no share in the world to come? Hamal bin Tnei Chaveru Merabin. Somebody who embarrasses his friend in public. Not even, never mind, kills him. Somebody embarrasses his face, because what happens when you embarrass somebody? The blood drains from his face, it says, and it's like killing him spiritually. It means the dimension of nefesh disappears. He wishes he weren't there, tries to crawl into the ground. He wishes he didn't have a nefesh anymore. He wishes he weren't alive. Everybody's felt that, knows. So that means the world of nefesh, if a person goes, you see, if somebody would kill somebody, so then he's taking away his whole existence. But the Chazal want to point out to you that it's not that, it's just attacking them. How do you attack somebody's nefesh without killing him? Embarrass him in public. What you do then is you leave a shell, just an empty shell, but the nefesh disappears. That's what happens. So these three things are three ways in which a person, they just point out again the importance. What have we learned about these three things? We've learned that not just are they the three elements of reality, but they're the source of those three elements of reality. That means there's a source of place, which is called Beis HaMikdash. Not just a dimension called place. That flows out from a central source, which is called Beis HaMikdash. Time flows out from a central source, which is called Moed, Shabbos. Moed, the place where time begins. Nefesh, the world of human nefesh, flows out from a source, which is the human nefesh in the world. Let me show you one more application of the same idea, and we'll try and connect it to Rosh Hashanah. We'll leave it there. It says that all these three elements, if you want to use them, that's how you can misuse them in the world. Like we just said, these three elements are terrible. Person breaks them down, no share in the world to come, cuts off his own spiritual existence. Obviously, you cut out a nefesh in the world, obviously you've cut your own nefesh out. You cut out the dimension of space, so you've cut out the kedusha where space flows out, you've cut yourself off. You cut off time, which is the whole process of growth and movement, spiritual growth. Of course, there can be none if you cut those off. How do you use them correctly? How do you use them correctly? Listen to this incredible thing. It says in some deeper sources, the way you use them correctly is, instead of just letting them be in the world, or instead of not misusing them, you must move towards them. If you live in the dimension of space, and you find yourself in space, you must move towards the center of space. You must move towards the flow, the outflow of bracha. Not just good enough to be in the ambit of what space is, you must move towards the center where the bracha is concentrated, where it flows out. In time, it's no good just existing in time. You must always be moving towards the center of time where bracha flows out. And the human dimension, you must move towards the center of bracha, which is a human being. Just give you three applications. It says this, that in the dimension of space, what do we have a mitzvah? Aliyah l'regel. There's a mitzvah that you have to go to the Beis HaMikdash. You have to go there. That's the mitzvah. Just you have to go there. That's all. You have to present yourself. What does it mean? You have to travel. You have to move through space to the center of bracha. When do you do it, by the way? On Moed, on the Yom Tov. Isn't that amazing? The Yom Tov, which is the time when you have to move towards the center of bracha in time, when that time comes around, you move through space to the center of bracha of space. Isn't it incredible? You're tired already, right? Otherwise you would... On the time of year when bracha is flowing out of the world in the dimension of time, so at that time there's a mitzvah to utilize it and feel it and relate to it, but then you also realize that this time that's flowing over you in the world, it's flowing over you as you move through space in the world. The two go hand in hand. So on that time you move towards... There's many other applications. It says that the time, in time itself you move towards bracha. You know, the Arizal used to have a custom, great Kabbalist in the 1500s in Sfas, he and his people, his Talmidim, used to go out, when Shabbos was coming in, what was the custom? You know, they used to go out into the fields. Do you know that? As Shabbos L'chadah di, you know, Kabbalah Shabbos is going out to receive the bride of Shabbos. Today, all we do, we turn around. You know, when we sing L'chadah di, all we do today is we turn around to greet Shabbos as she comes in through the door. That's all we do. But the real custom, the way it used to be, is they used to go out into the fields to greet Shabbos. They used to go out of town. Into the fields, out of the town, to greet Shabbos. In fact, I know a Kabbalist in Jerusalem. I live in a certain place. There's a man over there who's a very big Kabbalist. Started doing it. Started before Kabbalah Shabbos, everybody's in shul to walk out into the fields. Then people told him off very sternly about it. That looks strange. So he stopped doing it. Some other strange things he does also, but the late at night no one sees. But Kabbalah Shabbos, everybody looks out the window and there he's wandering off into the fields. So they stopped him doing it. But he wanted to do this thing. What's the idea? Shabbos arrives in the field before it arrives in town. What's the idea? You know, if you stay in shul, Shabbos won't... The thing is, if you want to feel the bracha, you have to go towards the source. If you wait for it to come to you, it'll never find you. You have to do the work. You're in the world not to wait until things find you. If you wait until then, they'll never find you. You're in the world to go towards the source of bracha. When comes the time to go to the Beis HaMikdash won't come to you. You have to walk there and present yourself over there. Then you'll have the electric experience. You'll see Nissim. But when Shabbos comes to the world, you sit there and wait for Shabbos to find you. They'll find you sleeping. Definitely. You have to be so ready. One day, listen to this. One day the Arizal walked out on Friday afternoon. into the fields with his Talmidim. Suddenly he turned to them. It was seconds before Shabbos. Seconds before Shabbos. He turned to them and he said to them, they were in Tzfat. It's a long way from Yerushalayim. It's a long way from Yerushalayim. It's hours and hours from Yerushalayim. Days walk, I don't know, a long way. Suddenly he turned to his Talmidim and said, let's go to the Beis HaMikdash now. Let's go now. So there was a moment's hesitation. And one of them said, fine, we'll just tell our wives. He said, too late, you've lost it. The opportunity is gone. You follow? It was an electric moment when had the Olam of Nefesh been in tune with the Olam of time and space, they could have taken it and put it all together. They could have brought Mashiach, which is the unification of it all. They could have, is that right? They could have gone out to greet Shabbos in time, and he felt they were almost there. They could have almost put that together with going to the source of space also. But how do you do that? The source of Nefesh has to be right. And if in the source of Nefesh there's a second hesitation, you haven't grasped time. There's this moment of hesitation, there's that moment of delay. For the right reason, he just wanted to tell his wife, that's all. Just took 2 seconds to think about it. That already loses it. And the third element, when you move towards Nefesh, it says, there's examples, I'll just give you one beautiful example. It says that, you hear this, a very subtle and beautiful point. When a person wants Brocha, we're talking about Brocha here. Brocha is where blessing flows out of the center of these dimensions. So listen to this incredible Chazal. Without this understanding, it defies, I don't know how anybody can understand these things unless you have a little bit of a faint hint of these deep ideas. It says, if a person makes a mistake in a Brocha, let's say a person makes a mistake, you make a blessing and you make it wrong. Make a blessing on a fruit and you do it wrong. Make a mistake. Huh? What should he do? It says, Yeitze Yeleich Eitzel Chochem V'yalamdenu Hilchas Brochas. A person who makes a mistake in a Brocha, what should he do? He should go to a Talmid Chochem, a sage, wise man, or somebody who knows, and he'll teach him the Halachas of Brocha so he won't get it wrong in future. Makes sense, right? A person gets a Brocha wrong, he needs to be taught. So he must go to a wise man who can teach him how to make Brochas, and then he'll know. But the question is this, if a person makes a mistake in anything, he must go and get taught the right way to do it. Anything, if you get Shabbos wrong, or you eat matzah wrong, or you treat your friend, any halacha you get wrong, you need to be taught how to do it right. But when it says that a person makes a mistake in halacha, it doesn't say go to a sage. It says find out, open a book, what's the difference? Invite the sage to your house, open a book, listen to a tape these days, open Art Scroll. I don't know, there's plenty of places to learn how to do things right these days. Why, when it comes to a mistake in brochas, does it say go to a sage? Well, you follow, it's irrelevant that I have to walk towards him. Chazal don't waste any words. If it says if a person makes a mistake in a brocha, he should learn the halachas of brochas. What do you mean walk to a sage? So should... Obviously the going towards him is important. Can you hear it? Brocha, you made a mistake in brocha. You don't know where the source of brocha is in the world. You don't know how to trace things to their source. You don't know what it means that there's an outflowing, a wellspring from where brocha flows out into the world. You don't know that. You must learn that. And to do that, you must walk towards the source of Brocha in the world, a sage. A person has built himself into Kedusha. Somebody who isn't outflowing, a wellspring, Mayana Mizgaber, he's a well of Torah. But before you can ask him to teach you, first you have to understand, you made such a mistake in Brocha, you don't understand what Brocha is. For that, you must walk towards the source. He'll teach you when you get there, but you have to move towards him. That's the first exercise, the first lesson you have to learn. Are you with me? These are the three elements that make up the world. Time, space, and the human soul. And Rosh Hashanah is the creation of all of them. And Rosh Hashanah is where the world began, so time began then. Space crystallized and condensed there, that's where the world began in space. And Adam HaRishon was created on that day. The human nefesh, they were all three created on that day. They all happened at once, they all were together on that day. These were the three elements that began. And that's Malchus, Zichronus, and Shekris. Malchus means Melech al kol haaretz, king of the whole world, that's what we say. Kingship means that he reaches all. He reaches all places on earth. He's the king of all, but don't hide any place. So when you say Malchus in the Amidah, what you're saying is the king of play. And look at the psukim. Look at the 10 quotations over there. You'll see. Over and over it talks about Hashem being king of the world. Melech al kol haaretz. He rules the world. That's what it is. Zichronos. Time. Memory. Going back in time. You made the world in the beginning, Hashem. And you, in other words, as the world rolls on in time, you go through that in what's called memory. Memory is the faculty of experiencing time, isn't that right? And Shofar, the last one, as we discussed in detail here, the Shofar is the sound of the Nefesh. The shofar is the sound of the neshama. The sound of Hashem breathing life into the human, the sound of that breath, if you just give it a voice, it's called shofar. That's what it is. So that Amida is Rosh Hashanah, is the time when you can go back to the source of bracha and find them all in yourself. Don't walk to a Talmid Chacham or go to the Beis HaMikdash. Go and do those things. But you can descend into the root of bracha that you are. You can go back and experience your own formation. As you begin to, the year is just being formed now. New time is being created. The world is being recreated in space now. And your neshama is being recreated. And if you can grasp it in those few seconds, as you daven Shmoneh Esrei, or in that day which is Rosh Hashanah, so a person can do the work of going back to the source and they can reform themselves. That's the energy that's being put out into the world here. The energy that's happening on that day is the reformation of the world, the recreation of the world. And just like all mitzvahs, every Yom Tov we have, we try and relive the experience. You're reliving the creation of all dimensions of the world. And the way you decide to do it then, with just an effort of will, just by deciding who you're going to be this year, if you work on it intensely and you make it real on that day, so definitely the year will go that way. And that's the mitzvah of the day. That's why the mitzvah is tshuva. Tshuva means returning back to the source of who you are. Teshuvah means to go back to the source, the way your neshama was pure when you were born. That's the effort of the day. To return to the source of purity, to put freshness and newness into all these three dimensions. And in Yitzhak Hashem, we should use this idea to be zeicha that we should all be able to stand then and wipe out all the cobwebs and all the run-down energies that have been through the previous year and start from that day, make a year that's never been seen, a year like that in the history of the world.